Hashem appears to Avram and says, Lech lecha me'artzecha, leave your homeland. Now, keep in mind that travel in those days was not quite what we engage in today. There were no highways, there were no directions, there were no maps. And you got your caravan together and you set out. Armed robbers were a regular part of the game. The weather was something that you had no control over nor no knowledge of. Certainly who your new neighbors would be, you had no idea, and you were heading out to a place that you knew nothing about. Different language, different culture, different way of life. Avram Avinu went without questioning Hashem. Hashem said, go, and he went. He packed up his caravan, he took his wife, took Lot, they traveled together, and he heads to Eretz Yisrael. Interestingly, no sooner does he enter Eretz Yisrael than there's a famine. There's nothing to eat. But interestingly, not a worldwide famine, only a famine in Canaan. Where he came from, there was plenty of food. Many other places, there was plenty of food. But only in Canaan, when he gets there, there's a famine. And it's so severe that there's literally nothing to eat. And you'd imagine that he could ask many questions. Hashem sends me out, risking my life, on this long, difficult journey. I do it without questioning, and I get here. No sooner do I get it, and then I have to leave. There's mamish nothing to eat. He doesn't question Hashem. He turns around. And Rashi says, Vayirav ba'aretz, there was a famine in that land. And says, Rashi ba'osa aretz levada, in that land alone, linososo, to test him. The reason why Hashem arranged, orchestrated that there should be a famine in that land was as a test to Avram. But what was the test? Whether he would question Hashem, whether he would ask, whether he would say, Hashem, why? But Avram Avinu passed that test flawlessly. He didn't question, he didn't ask. He headed straight down to Mitzrayim without even a hearer, without even a thought. And if you look at the Tosfos Yontif on Avos, Tosfos Yontif explains that when Avram Avinu was Ome the Asura Nisyonas, when he withstood the 10 tests, they were not tests to see whether Avram Avinu would listen. Hashem spoke directly to this tzaddik. This man was a Navi. This man was on a level that's hard to imagine. There wasn't a question whether he would listen or not. Each one of the tests were exactly on this point. Would he be Mahari? Would he question Hashem? Of course he'll do it. But will he do it with unwavering trust? Will he do it with joy in his heart? Will he doing it saying the words, this is what Hashem wants? Or will he ask? And he didn't ask. He went down to Mitzrayim. And there in Mitzrayim he was to spend some time. On the way down, as he came close to getting to Mitzrayim, v'yomer Sara ishto, he said to Sara, his wife, hinei nayadati, now I know, ki isha yifas mara'at, now I recognize that you're a beautiful woman. Rashi's bothered by the problem that that's a very strange expression for a man to say to his wife, who he's married to for many, many years, now I recognize you're a beautiful woman. And explains Rashi that up until that point, lo hikir bo, at Akshav, until that point, Lohikibor, he didn't recognize Mitoch Tznius Shebeshnehem because of the Tznius, the modesty of both of them. Akshav Hikibor, now he recognized. Avram Avinu recognized that he was going down to Mitzrayim. He understood that the Mitzrayim were people of ill repute. And it was now incumbent upon him to find out whether his wife was a beautiful woman or not. If she was a beautiful woman, that might be dangerous. She wasn't much of an issue. So he had to look. But Rashi's telling us that up until that point, he didn't look. Now, this is a very difficult Rashi to understand. Why? Because we know that a woman's beauty is very important to the health of a marriage. A husband should find his wife attractive. A husband should look at his wife and see her as a beautiful woman. And in fact, the Sefer Chinuch explains to us, and Ezra makes it more clear, that you should train your eye to be attracted to your wife. Because attraction is a key ingredient in a successful marriage. You don't have to marry the most beautiful woman in the world, but you have to view your wife as the most beautiful woman in the world, and you have to train yourself to see your wife in that vein. You have to train yourself that this is a woman, this is the one that Hashem wants me to have, and you have to train your eye to see the beauty of your wife, because that's an important part of a successful marriage. So that being said, let's ask two questions. Number one, how then is it possible that Avram didn't look? How is it possible that he didn't use this tool that's an important part of a successful marriage? But even more importantly, how is it possible that he didn't notice? Wasn't Avram Avinu a human being? Wasn't he just like you and I? And I'd like to share with you what I believe Pshat in this Rashi is. Rabbi Ari Levine, one Purim after his wife died, was holding a picture of his wife. And some of his people said, Rebbe, why is the Rebbe holding a picture of his wife now? It's Purim, I'm supposed to be happy. And he said these words, the longer that she's gone, the less I remember her physical appearance, but the more I remember her sterling character traits, her acts of chesed. I wanted to have the picture just to remember, just to bring it back. When you get to a certain point, certainly in a mature marriage, imagine you have 80-year-olds who are happily married, who love each other. The physical part of it doesn't matter. You see, the physical part of a marriage is a key to getting a person to a certain point. The attraction, the hunger, the lust are tools to get the human beings bonded. Much like the swan that bonds with its mate and remains a pair bond for life, Hashem wants a man to bond to his wife, and there to be an attraction, a particular technique, and many techniques to cause that attachment, that love, that bonding. But those tools are exactly that. Tools to be used to create the attachment, tools to be used to create the bonding. But once you're bonded, the tools are no longer needed. Avram Avinu and Sarah Imenu were in such a madrega that they didn't need the physical as we do to attach one to another. She was the most pure, giving, kindly, loving human being you could imagine. He was the most giving, kindly human being you could imagine. And the two of them bonded with absolute attachment, love, and they had a beautiful, powerful attachment one to the other. But because they were on the level that they were, they didn't need the physical. If Avram Avinu felt that he could be more attached to his wife, if he felt he could be bonded more, I dare say he would have used this tool of her beauty to further cause that attachment. Keep in mind that Sarah Imenu was one of the four most beautiful women in history. Chazal tell us there were four of the most beautiful women ever in the course of humankind. One of them was Sarah. So needless to say, if Avram Avinu felt that his marriage needed an additional boost, an additional attachment, he used it. But Avram Avinu and Sarah Imenu were on the madriga that they didn't need it. They were attached, they were bonded, they were beyond that. And this is illustrative of the greatness of the Avos, illustrative of the greatness of a human being, but it must be understood in context. And I'd like to explain to you what I mean. There's a mile marker and there's a North Star. A mile marker is what you use to gauge yourself against. If you're a runner, you clock yourself by the mile, what's your speed per mile. A mile marker on the highway is something that you look towards to see how you're doing. A North Star is something way up high in the sky. If you're sailing the seas, you use it to navigate to determine your course. We're supposed to look at the Avos and say, Masai Yagia Lamaisi Avosai, when will my actions reach the level of the Avos? But they're North Stars. What that means is, I'm not Avram Avinu, I never will be Avram Avinu, and it's foolish and counterproductive to try to act in the way of Avram Avinu because it's going to come back to hurt you. These are North Stars, way up high in the sky. I see the potential what a human being can reach. I use them to set my course, but I don't use them as mile markers. I don't compare myself to the others directly. The way the others lived is not the way I will live. What they accomplished is not what's expected of me. The Avos were the Avos. I'm me. I'm expected to accomplish with my strengths, my talents, my abilities, what I can. I use them as great heroes. I put them up on a shelf and I say, wow, that's astonishing. That's magnificent. That's remarkable. But I don't compare myself to them. I had a chaver who couldn't read art school biographies. And a friend of mine who said every time he read an art school biography, he got depressed. Look at these gdolim, and they grow, and they accomplish, and they reach such heights. Interestingly, I read art school biographies regularly, and I never had that problem. Why? Because there's a perspective. And when I read about Rav Moshe Feinstein, I look at a great man. Wow, and I'm inspired. But I don't measure myself by his criteria. I will not fill his shoes. I will not chaz shas like it's nothing. You just go through it as if it's not me. But I could use that great man and his great accomplishments to further my own growth. And I could say to myself, if within his realm he reached this, what could I do within my realm? That's a North Star and something I put up on the shelf, something I use as a motivational technique. I don't compare myself in terms of accomplishments. He's not a mile marker. I don't gauge my progress, kafi his progress. I use him as an inspiration. I use him as a tool. When we read about the Kedusha of the Avos, the holiness, and the levels that they reach, we're supposed to be inspired. We're supposed to say, wow, Avram Avinu didn't recognize whether his wife was beautiful or not. He was married the most literally beautiful woman in her time, and he didn't recognize it. What a holy man. They were bonded. They were attached. He was so above physicality that he didn't need it. It didn't count. He loved his wife for who she was. He was attached to his wife for her greatness, her sitkis. And the physical was irrelevant. And that should be awe-inspiring. It should be very powerful. But I'm not that. And if you're a husband, you should do everything in your power to make yourself attractive to your wife, and you should do everything in your power to make yourself attracted to your wife. Your wife should make herself look as good as she can. That's part of a marriage. And understanding that it's a tool in a marriage is an important part of growth. But it's important also to recognize that there were different generations, different times, different expectations, and to recognize that there could be a human being who walked the same earth that I do, but was leagues and leagues, miles above, is an important inspirational point, because we see what a human being is capable of. I'm not measured against that. I won't be there, but it's awe-inspiring to see. In any case, Avram Avinu goes down to Mitzrayim, and he says to his wife, they're going to see you as a beautiful woman, and the Mitzrayim are going to kill me because of that. Please, tell them that I'm your brother. They'll treat me with great accord, great honor. I'll stay alive. You'll stay alive. Do that. And in fact, that's what they did when they got to Mitzrayim. They told Paro, this is my sister. And in fact, the entire story unfold. What's interesting to note is that this is one of the Asar Nishyonos that Avram Avinu faced. This is one of the 10 Nishyonos. And it's also important to understand what an Asayan is. The Ramban asks a very important point. If I'm a teacher teaching a class, I give the class a test to see what they know. I, the teacher, don't know what they do know, what they don't know. I give them a test to see what they know. But Hashem knows everything. Hashem knows exactly what's in the heart of Avram. Hashem knows exactly where Avram's at. Why does Hashem have to give a test? And explains the Ramban fundamentally is so that an assayin is not a test as we understand a test. An assayin is a growth opportunity to take something from the potential and bring it to the actual. And you want an illustration of it? Imagine a man who trains for 10 years, for 10 years for the Olympics. And he's right there at the final game. And he breaks his leg. He doesn't win the gold. He spent 10 years training, getting to that moment, but for whatever reason, he didn't get to do it. For history, he will not be the Olympic star. He will not be the gold medal winner. What an assayin does is take years and years of work and allows it to come to fruition allows it to be concretized in one victory. Bitachon is not an easy thing to grow in. It takes much work, much effort. And if you work and you work, you work and you work, sometimes Hashem will give you an opportunity to take those years of work, put it into one action that concretizes it, that puts it into concrete, and for eternity, that is yours. Avraham Avinu spent his life growing, perfecting himself, becoming a man of unimaginable stature. And Hashem gave him 10 opportunities to take years and years of growth and put them into an act. And each one of these acts became a shining jewel in his crown for eternity. And we now, 3,000 plus years later, turn back to some of Avraham Avinu's acts and ask Hashem in the merit of those acts, save us. Whenever the Klal Yisrael is in trouble, Hashem, save us in the merit of Akedas Yitzhak. Hashem, save us in the merit of what the Avos did. The acts that Avraham Avinu engaged in were such acts of perfection, such powerful beacons for eternity, that we now rely on them. In his crown for eternity are 10 powerful jewels that shine out forever. And this would be interesting and very, very eye-opening if it weren't for the fact that the Ramban points out that Avraham Avinu actually failed. Says the Ramban, Chet Gadol Chata Bishgaga. Avraham Avinu sinned a major sin, Chet Gadol, a big sin, Bishogeg, unintentionally, but he sinned a major sin. Why? Shehivi Ishto Asadekes Michshal Avon. He brought his wife Sarah into the Avera of potentially living, a married woman living with a man. Says the Ramban, Hayilo Livtzach Bashem. Avram should have trusted in Hashem. She also saw that Hashem would save him. Ves Ishto Vaskola Shalom. Avram Avinu should not have left Eretz Yisrael. Avram Avinu should not have told Sarah to lie. Avram Avinu, when he got to Canaan and he found that there was no food, should have said, Hashem is very, very capable of feeding me, and he should not have gone. He should not have left. And even if he did leave, which was a mistake and a failure, he failed a second time. He went down to Mitzrayim and he told his wife to lie. Well, sir, when you tell your wife to lie, what's going to happen? She's one of the most beautiful women in the world. It may well be that Paro is going to take her, and it may well be that she'll be forced to live as an Esh Yisrael with another man. Says the Ramban, Chet Gadol Chata Avraham Avinu, Bishgaga Bishogeg, he sinned a great sin. Now, this Ramban is very difficult to understand, because don't we know that these were part of the major successes of Avraham Avinu? The fact that he got to Canaan, there was no food, and he didn't question Hashem. And he went down without it. That's one of the nesionos. And we're told that he passed that. That's one of the shining jewels in his crown for eternity. How could the Ramban say that he sinned a great sin? If he sinned, it's not a jewel, it's a sin. How could it be that this is one of the nesionos that Avraham Avinu passed, that coming to Canaan and seeing that there's no food and being tested whether he'll ask Hashem, whether he'll question Hashem or not, that's a test that he passed, that's a test that forever is his glory, and yet the Ramban says he sinned. He should not have left it. Eretz Yisrael, he shouldn't have told his wife to do this. And this Ramban is very, very difficult to understand. And to understand this Ramban, I'd like to share with you an interesting perspective. A number of years ago, I got a call from a frum psychiatrist. He needs help. He has a patient, fellow in yeshiva, and the boy has a little bit of OCD. He's fixated on certain things, and the guilt is destroying him. The boy is involved in various of young men. He's Otsizera, and that alone isn't so much the problem. The problem is that he has such guilt. He has such bad feelings about what he does that it's literally killing him. He can't continue. So the psychiatrist called me up to ask me, what is the right hashkafa? What should he say to this young man? Now, if you think about it, that's a very rough position to be put in. What is the right hashkafa? What am I going to tell you? It's mutter. Being motzi zeres, kamevi mabul olam, it's not permitted. It's a sin. It's not good. I can't tell you it's permitted. But what am I going to tell you? It's forbidden. If I tell you it's forbidden, you're going to tell this boy that, and it's like taking kerosene and pouring it on the fire. He's going to self-destruct. He's going to implode. So what do you say to him? So I'd like to share with you what I believe the correct perspective is. Rabbi Dvirat Rosh Yeshiva Rochester once said over a powerful observation in Gemara. Gemara Bava Basra, Daf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph, tells us, Arba Mesu B'itov Shel Nachash. There were four men who never sinned. Four men who should not have died. Four men who should have lived forever because in their life they didn't commit a sin. Who were these four men? Binyamin ben Yaakov, Amram, the father of Moshe, Yishai, the father of David, and Kelov ben David. These were the four men who, as the Marsha explains, never veered off the path of Yosher and never sinned. They were perfect individuals. But here's the point. They weren't the Avos. They weren't the greatest human beings who ever lived. They're great people. Binyamin, the son of Yaakov, Amram, the father of Moshe, Yishai, the father of David, Kelov, the son of David. They were great people, but they weren't the Avos. The greatest human beings who ever lived were Moshe, Aaron, Avram, Yitzhak, Yaakov, Yosef, Yoshpizin. Way, way below them were these four. So how could it be? How could it be that these four never sinned? They never sinned, and yet they're not the Avos. And Rabbi Durez's point was, and a very powerful point it is, that a human being was not created not to sin. Oh, we have to not sin because sin damages me, sin destroys my potential, but we weren't put onto the planet not to sin. We were put onto the planet to grow, to accomplish. There never was, nor ever will be, a human being who reached Moshe Rabbeinu's level. There never was a human being like Aaron, Avram, Yitzhak, Yaakov. These were pillars, powerful, powerful. Yet every one of them sinned. Every one of them, on some level, made mistakes. And the four people who never made mistakes were not amongst the greatest human beings ever lived. They never sinned, but they also never accomplished quite what the Avos did. Granted, they never sinned. There was nothing on the negative side, but their positive side, the accomplishment, weren't as great either. And the point is, we weren't created not to sin. Oh, again, you can't sin because Hashem said not to do it and it messes you up and messes up the world. But that's not the purpose of life. The purpose of life is to grow, to accomplish. Oftentimes, resisting sin is part of your growth, but it's to accomplish, to reach levels. And the greatest men were not the people who never sinned. Quite the opposite. Throughout Tanakh, you'll see over and over, the Torah tells us that the Avos made mistakes, granted not on our level, and granted well above, but they had sins. And I want to share with you a mashal that I think is very, very important. Imagine that I'm holding in my hand two 10-carat diamonds. Big, bright, brilliant. And you look at them. And I say to you, they're both 10 carats. One of them is a beautiful, beautiful diamond, but has a flaw, a small flaw. You can't really see it except with a loop. It has a flaw. The other diamond is flawless, perfect. Under a microscope, you cannot see a flaw. And I ask you, what is the difference in value between these two diamonds? You'll say to me, wow, I mean, a 10-carat diamond with a flaw is worth who knows how much, but I mean, there's probably no comparison. A 10-carat flawless diamond is probably worth 10 times, maybe 100 times more than a diamond with a flaw. And I'd like to share with you that you're right, except the opposite. You see, a 10-carat diamond with a very small flaw is worth a king's ransom. A 10-carat diamond that is literally flawless is worthless because the only flawless perfect diamonds are made in the laboratory. They're made of cubic zirconium. Because any diamond that's brought forth from the ground has an imperfection in it, albeit slight. Many of them only can be seen under a microscope. But if it came from the ground, if it's a real diamond, there's a flaw in it. And as a matter of fact, the first thing that a jeweler will do when you bring him a diamond is he'll look for the flaw. Because if he doesn't see a flaw, it's a fake. And it's only when he sees the flaw that it's a real diamond. And I think that mashal helps us understand Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. These people were powerful, powerful diamonds, 200 carats, brilliant, shining for eternity. But they had flaws, very, very minute, very, very tiny. You could only see them with a magnifying glass. But there were flaws there. But you see, that's the point. human beings have flaws. Malchei Asharis are perfect. Hashem has many, many perfect beings in this world. They're called malachim. But a human being is not a malach. But a human being can be hugely greater than a malach. A human being is supposed to have flaws, weaknesses, and fallacies. That's part of being human. The greatest human beings, Moshe, Aaron, Avram, Yitzhak, Yaakov, Yosef, had flaws. Albeit very small, but they were brilliant, brilliant diamonds with flaws. And if you're looking to be a flawless, perfect diamond, you're not looking to be a human. And what I said to this, the hashkafa for this yeshiva bacha is exactly that. You see, your job in life is not necessarily right now to work on this problem. You see, Avram Avinu was presented with an assignment. He got to Eretz Yisrael, and there was no food to eat. And that was a major, major Nisayon. A major Nisayon. Would he question Hashem? Hashem, you sent me on the road. You sent me without food. And I finally get here. And here only there's a famine. That was a major Nisayon for Avraham Avinu, which he passed because he didn't question Hashem. But he also made a mistake. Had he been on a higher level of bitachon, he would have trusted Hashem and would have remained there. And that act had a flaw. It was a brilliant diamond. A tremendous accomplishment. He passed the Nisayon of whether you question Hashem. He didn't question Hashem. And forever, that's a brilliant diamond in his crown. But within that diamond, there was a flaw. Because had he been even greater, not only would he have questioned Hashem, he would have remained in Eretz Yisrael, would have stayed there, but he didn't. He went down to Mitzrayim, put his wife in jeopardy. There was a flaw in that diamond. But this perspective, that one of the ultimate highlights of Avraham Avinu's life had a flaw in it, is very important. For eternity, this act is brought out part of his legacy. He got to Eretz Yisrael and he didn't question. And yet within that brilliant act, there was a flaw, and there was a mistake. Had he been even greater, he wouldn't have left. You and I, had we gotten there, obviously we would leave because that's the Derech HaTeva. He was on the type of level that he shouldn't have even had to have done that, he should have remained there. And for him, for that man, in that case, it was a slight flaw. That 200-carat diamond had a flaw in it, but that's human beings, and that's an important understanding. The ability to take an act and say it's a diamond with a flaw, that I am a diamond with a flaw, is a very important act. And I believe that that's the correct hashkafa for this yeshiva bachar. And so it could be that as a bachar, you're not going to work on these things. You're not going to conquer these things. You have to fight. But it could be you're not going to conquer. But it could also be that that's not your real Nisayon. The real Nisayon for that Bachar at that time was whether he would self-implode. You see, let's assume that he deals with this situation and gets past the guilt and continues steiging. He continues growing, continues learning. He fights the fight, loses a lot, wins some, loses a lot, lose some. And eventually he gets married, and eventually he can become an Adam Gadol. He can grow, he can become a tremendous human being, and he can become a sterling, shining light for eternity. But let's assume at this moment he doesn't deal with the guilt, and he allows the guilt to crush him, and he quits, and it's over. Quits yeshiva, gives this whole thing up, and he becomes whatever. Maybe he still davens, maybe he doesn't, he does put on tefillin, doesn't, I don't know, whatever. And he gets married and he's just a miserable fraction of what he could have been. You see, the real Nisayon for that Bachar isn't whether he stopped being Motzi Zera at that point. The real fight wasn't Taiva. The real fight was you're in a situation that you didn't choose. You're in a matzav of extraordinary guilt that you're not happy with. How do you deal with that guilt? You put it aside and continue and grow and become a tremendous individual. Keep learning, keep steiging, keep davening, and eventually you'll come back and work on this issue, or you crumble up. But recognizing that sometimes the fight is a little different than we think it is an important understanding for life. Sometimes the fight is about keeping on, continuing. And oftentimes, if you're a bachur living in the 21st century, you have to recognize the reality that you're not going to solve this problem right now. You can't give in. You can't give up. You have to recognize I'm going to win some. I'm going to lose some. I'm going to fight and fight and fight, and I'm not going to win. I'll keep fighting. I'll keep growing. Yitzhak Hashem, I'll get married. Things will change. And even then, I'll still have to fight, but it's going to be a different fight. And eventually, I'll cure this, but it's going to be a long battle. And it could be that the real fight right now, the real challenge for you, is not whether you actually conquer this issue. The real conquer is, do you let this issue conquer you? Does the guilt, does a sense of, ugh, does a sense of, look at me, how could I do this and expect myself to be somebody, destroy you? Avram Avinu, he would never do this. Chasam Sofer would never do this. Rabbi Akiva Eiger never would do this. I can never be anybody great. I can never reach my potential because, look, these people never did this kind of stuff, and yet I do this kind of stuff. Obviously, I'm not made for greatness. Obviously, I'm not supposed to be a guttle. I'm just, ugh. And those words can be the most destructive words you'll ever speak to yourself. And those words can literally paralyze you, destroy you, and those words are sheker. It could well be that your real challenge now is not to fight this fight. It could be the real challenge for you right now is, what do you do now when you're losing this battle? Do you allow it to destroy you? Do you keep growing? Do you keep steiging? And do you eventually become an Adam Gadol? You are not Avram Avinu. Avram Avinu didn't look at his wife. Avram Avinu didn't need physical beauty because the others were leagues and leagues above us. We're supposed to look at the others and recognize real greatness. And we're supposed to look at the others and say that I'll never get there. Because I'll say I'm supposed to measure myself. I use them as my North Star. I use them as that powerful beacon way up high in the sky. But I'm not going to get there. I use them to set my direction, to set my course. But they're not mile markers. And the reality is that if you were born in this generation, with this situation, and you're single, the odds are very, very good that you're not going to win this battle until you get married. And even then, it's not going to be a walk in the park. It's going to be a very difficult battle, many difficult challenges. You might win some, you might lose some, but it's not going to just be a walk in the park. And one of the most destructive thoughts you can have is, so obviously that means I can't be a great person. Obviously that means I'll never amount to real godless. How could I steig? Look at me, I'm such a hypocrite. I learned 3-star Medina based Medrash, and then look what I do. Obviously Torah and me, obviously being a great person, it's not me. Because great people don't do this stuff. Great people aren't involved in this stuff. And by the way, you're right. People like Moshe Rabbeinu, Aaron Cohen, didn't do this stuff. You're right. But you're not them. And the generation that you were born into isn't the generation that they were born into. The Navi tells us that in one generation, there were 8,000 pairs of knees that didn't bow down to Baal. Out of the Jewish nation, there were 8,000 people who didn't bow down to Avodah Zarah. What about the rest of the people? What about the millions of Jews? They did. We don't understand the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah. We don't understand what it means to be pulled, to be schlepped, to need it, to have it. We don't understand the pleasure that a person got from serving Avodah Zarah. And we can't judge that generation because we don't understand the Nisayon. But every generation has a Nisayon. Every generation has its challenges. And the generation that we live in is vastly different than any other generation in the course of history. Such availability, such regular things that you're exposed to. The average young fellow today in yeshiva is exposed to more things than the oldest people in Europe. A young bachur is exposed to that which married men for 20 years never would never dream of, never see, never be involved. What we experience on a daily basis is beyond description. And if it was bad 10 years ago because you had pornography and women who were naked in the streets and running around in all states of undress, it's 10 times worse now because of technology. With Wi-Fi, there are no walls. And it penetrates even the Dalet Kosli Beis Medrash. And even if you're pure, you'll have one guy in the shir, one guy in the class who's got stuff on his iPhone or his smartphone. And before you know it, you're looking at things and doing things that human beings shouldn't be looking at, shouldn't be doing. And the Nisayon of our generation is very, very schwer. It's focused. It's in this area. But it's a very, very difficult Nisayon. and we aren't judged by people of different generations. And if you find that you have a flaw, if you find that in fact you do things that you're not happy with, and you're actually courageous enough to look in the mirror and say, I messed up. I really didn't do what I want to do. I did do what I didn't want to do. You also have to have the ability to say, I get it. I'm a human being with tremendous potential. And I could accomplish, I could grow, and I have a flaw. There's a weakness. I'm a diamond with a flaw, which proves that I'm not a Malach HaShoreis. It proves I'm a human being, because every human being has flaws. But you see, this is the point. The flaw doesn't make the diamond worthless. What the flaw does is it proves that it's real. Does that mean you could just forgive yourself and not be involved? It means you could just forget the fight? Oh, no. You have to work on the flaw, and you have to make it as small as you can, and you have to keep battling the battle. But understanding that oftentimes the flaw isn't the problem. It's not letting the guilt and the horrible feelings and the sense of I'm nobody destroy your real potential to grow. I'm going to come back to fight this. I'm going to fight it now. I may not win now. I may have to focus on it later on in life. I may eliminate it then. I'll keep fighting the fight. But my goal now is to grow, to accomplish, to become a powerful diamond, to grow from 1 carat to 2 carat, 2 carat to 4, 6, 10 carats. I'm going to grow. Will there be a flaw? Yes, there will be a flaw. Am I going to eliminate it today? Probably not. And I will be a brilliant diamond with a flaw. And this perspective, I think, is very, very fundamental and key to understanding life. Avraham Avinu failed. That tremendous accomplishment, one of the Asur Nisyonos, had a failure in it. He was tested by Hashem. But the real test was, will you question Hashem? There's another part of it. Now that you got to Canaan, are you going to stay there? Are you going to trust in Hashem more? He failed that part. That brilliant diamond had a flaw in it. And the greatest human beings who ever lived had flaws in them. Moshe, Aaron, the Avos had flaws. The four people who never sinned, who were perfect, were not the greatest human beings who ever lived. Because the diamond doesn't devalue because of the flaw. The flaw proves it's real. The flaw is a part of it, but it's still a diamond. And this understanding that your focus has to be to grow, to accomplish despite it, is one of the keys to success in life. And the ability to deal with the, not just the guilt, but the ability to deal with the recognition that I could be an Olam Gadol, I could be a great human being, and I could be a tremendously accomplished person, and it could be that there's a part of me that I'm embarrassed about. And I want to share with you a hashkafa point that you may say doesn't have much to do with dealing with taiva, but I say it does. Let's assume you're involved in stuff when you were single, and you get married. What do you tell your wife? And so I'd like to share with you that there are many, many things that you should tell your wife, and there are many things that you shouldn't tell your wife. And if you're a big believer in open and honest relations, and you should be, and you should be open with your wife, and you should also understand that there are some things that are better off not said. And I'll explain to you some of them. You see, men and women are different. Men and women have different needs, different emotionalities, and men and women react to taiva differently. I'll share with you an example. When I was more involved with Teres Bnei Torah, we had couples, we would create weekends and kol habokers, different things for chizuk. Half of the guys were married, half were single. In any case, at one of the weekends we were preparing, we were going to go, we're going to have a Shabbaton in a hotel. But the problem was that the pool was in a part of the hotel that there were quite a number of rooms that surrounded the pool. And we wanted to have women swim at a certain hours. And we could put mechitzas around the pool. But the problem is the rooms were overlooking the pool. And you could look directly from the rooms into the pool. So we had to choose which couples we could trust, you know, that it would remain sneas and the guys wouldn't be in the room, etc. So one of the women on the planning committee said to me, so put us, me and my husband, there. You could trust my husband. I couldn't say it, but her husband was the last guy in the world I would ever trust over a pool with women in it. Her husband had a wandering eye. But I want to share with you why she didn't recognize it. You see, her husband was a good guy, a family man, dedicated father, good husband. And to a woman, that translates as a loyal, dedicated husband. Well, just like I am a loyal, dedicated wife, I don't look at men in all states of undress. Obviously, if my husband is dedicated and loyal, is a good guy, he's not going to look at other women. And that is true for women. Women who have a happy marriage and are brought up properly don't have such desires, they don't have such needs, and certainly if they're told not to look, they won't look because they just don't do it. But men and women are a bit different. And it could well be that you've gone through things that your wife will never understand, will never be able to relate to, and it's not going to help your marriage to share them with her because she won't have the emotional framework to relate to this, to understand this. I used to say this regularly, and I got great chizik that I saw Rav Miller put this in, so I'll put this in writing. There are things that you should not tell your wife, and this is amongst them. You should be open, you should be honest, you should bare your soul, but there are some things for Shalom Bayis that are better left unsaid. But you see, you have to understand the reason why. And the reason is because there is a flaw within you that you can understand, another guy can immediately understand, but women can't relate to. It doesn't make sense in their emotional operative sense, and therefore they won't relate to it. And you have to understand, this is the way Hashem made men, the way Hashem made women, and ultimately it's not something to be embarrassed about, provided that I'm working on it. You see, they don't ask me in what situation I was put. They ask me what I did, how I reacted to that situation. They don't ask me how I got here. They ask me how I got out of it. What did I do to get out of that situation? As I said earlier, there are many, many situations that you were put into. You see, Avram Avinu was, you'll excuse my expression, set up for the failure. Did Hashem know that Avram Avinu was going to fail, that he was going to end up going to Mitzrayim? I sure believe so, because it's part of the entire shalshelis, the entire chain of events that was to happen to Avram, to Sarah, eventually for the Klal Yisrael. Hashem knew that, so why did Hashem set him up for the failure? The answer is that sometimes in life you're put into situations because that's what's supposed to be, and you're supposed to be there. And the question isn't how you ended up there. The question is, how did you get yourself out of it? What did you do to change? Any guy who's involved in any level in Taiva has a story. For one guy, it was the internet. You know, my parents didn't realize about filters. It was years ago. No one understood filters. So Matzah Shabbos, I was home. And I started, you know, going around. No one knew back then. So I looked here, looked there. And before you knew it, I'm gone. Another guy, it's a friend who had a magazine, or a friend who had an iPod, or a friend who, whatever. But every guy has a story. And most likely, you're not responsible for where you are. Had you been greater, could you have won? Yeah. Avram Avinu, had he been greater, could have won. But there's not a major tie against Avram Avinu. It's a flaw. A flaw in his diamond, but he's still a brilliant diamond. But this is the point. They don't ask you how you got here. They ask you what you did to get out of it. If you were born in the 21st century and you had normal friends and you're healthy male, you will have issues dealing with it. And you most likely were set up for certain matzahs, certain situations. And the question isn't how you got here. And the fact that you're here doesn't make you valueless and doesn't make you worthless. The only question is, what did you do to get out of it? And from this point forward, you can grow, you could accomplish, you can become a shining diamond from 1 carat to 2 carat to 10 carat to 20 carat, and you work on this floor, and slowly, slowly you'll change. And working on the floor itself is part of your growth. And working on the floor and battling that battle is part of your accomplishments. But understanding that the floor doesn't mean that you're worthless. Understanding the only question they ask you is what you did to change is a fundamental you sowed, a fundamental understanding of what is required for growth.